In 1919, he hit 29 home runs and was sold to the New York Yankees.
A three-run home run for Buffington. The Yankees now lead it by a score of 3-2.
Bill Lee is now going over to a couple of the Yankees, and there they go again.
Swung, hits it to deep left. That might send the Yankees to the World Series.
Varitek and A-Rod going at it. Roberts is going. Posada's throw. Roberts, safe.
What can I say? Just dip my heart and call the Yankees my daddy.
Welcome to Fanbase, a deep dive into the greatest rivalry in sports. Brian Shackman, John Senecal here for episode 150. Wow.
The big 150.
John wanted to do something for 100, and we couldn't figure out what to do. So
we'll set our sights on 200.
Here's the agenda. We're going to talk about the uniform stuff. We're going to talk about our teams. We're going to talk about the league, and including some issues with the bottom of the league, and with a really interesting factoid about a game the LA Dodgers played this week. And then we're going to update our kids a little bit, which I think is really fun, because I have a nugget that I didn't share with you that I want to share with you. But, I mean, this uniform thing, I thought it was Fanatics, but then I'm reading Nike. Is this the one where people's balls were showing and stuff?
Or yeah, this different. The see-through pants, and now that the season has started, it's the ripped pants and the sweaty jerseys. Speaking from a Yankees perspective, last time I think Carlos Rondon pitched, he looked like he had taken a bath or a shower with his jersey on. He was just totally wringing wet.
So Nike makes them or Fanatics makes them?
Well, so I guess it runs through Fanatics, but Nike actually makes the jerseys, and Fanatics is like, I'm guessing they're involved somehow, so like they're probably the middleman, right? And Nike, it was the new Nike Vapor or something like that they unveiled at the All-Star game the prior year, but I guess modified.
They're going to do what? They're going to throw all of them out and make new ones?
New changes, I guess, aren't coming, I guess, until next season.
So they have to play the whole year with their balls hanging out.
Balls hanging out, pants ripping, and small letters. So I guess what the main complaints were was the see-through uniforms and the uniforms that were supposed to be breathable, I guess they might breathe, but then they are like sponges. They hold water,
right,
too. And then the small lettering, that was like the first thing. I remember like everyone was outraged about the tiny letters on the back. Now, for someone like Pete Crow Armstrong, that's great, right? The guy from the Cubs who just got called up. Or for like normal players, you can barely see him.
Right.
So that's what's being changed, basically. And from what I've read, it's going to not actually take place until the 2025 season.
So they're going to have to deal, because you know what? I mean, from a business perspective, they're like, we can't eat all that inventory, right? So
right.
They just won't make new stuff. But I guarantee you there'll be a story in September. They're going to run out of material. Like, you know what I mean? Like, because they're obviously not going to make new.
Right.
You know, it's going to be an interesting thing.
Or what happens when they have to start making the postseason, if they're going to make special postseason jerseys. And I don't know what's going on with the City Connect stuff either, because no one's really complaining about that. Maybe those are a different breed or something? I don't know, because they are full uniforms, the City Connects.
What do the Yankees do for City Connect? Because
they haven't done it yet.
Right, because they're bound in tradition.
Yeah. And you see the Mets ones? Oh, my God.
You complain about the helmet.
It looked like it was like a giveaway helmet or something. It was like a Mets helmet where they like put like a facade cityscape across the top. It looked like a Burger King crown.
Really?
It just did not.
Well, it's funny because you make fun of the Red Sox one. I love the Red Sox City Connect.
I think it's just because it's a yellow. I think that's what it is. It's just so far from. Now, I don't. I mean, there's some connection to yellow or
to the marathon.
Right.
Yeah.
But for me, from the outside, not, you know, I guess that's why it's a City Connect. I mean, I have no tie to the city.
It's crazy that the Yankees can totally play by their own rules. Like, you know. Verdugo with no facial hair. Like people abide by it without even questioning it.
Yeah.
Do you think, my sense is that they might not ever do a City Connect shirt.
My boys and I were talking about that because, I mean, they like the drip nowadays. And this is what this is all about, right?
What's the drip?
The drip, how you look. It's not how you play, it's how you look.
Is that the same as your Riz?
Oh, I don't know.
Because there's Riz.
There's Riz and drip? I didn't know there was Riz. The only Riz I know is Anthony Rizzo.
I think Riz is like charisma.
All right, yeah.
And drip is like how you look?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, you know, the City Connect is the drip, and that's what they're looking at. The next one, they critique them. Some are good, some are bad. Actually, my oldest son has a City Connect Kansas City Bobby Witt jersey that he asked for Christmas, and I got for him, and it's a really sharp jersey, but some of them look stupid, I think.
I think some of them look really dumb, like Miami's are dumb.
Philly was mixed reaction. They were just recently.
I think Pittsburgh's are cool. I really like the Red Sox, so I understand the criticism, but I have one. I only own two quote unquote jerseys. I have, my wife got me the City Connect because I don't wear, I'm not a jersey guy.
Right.
And then I have a Hartford Whalers hooded sweatshirt, which looks like a jersey.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's certain times for like, I'm not a jersey guy either. I'm more like a t-shirt, you know, but I'll wear the logo stuff, but
right.
very seldom. I own one jersey, a Derek Jeter jersey, and it was given to me, and I wear it every once in a while.
Let's quickly whip through. Listen, Yankees, obviously that it's a tough series with the Orioles. It's so early to pass judgment on anything. Aaron Judge is hitting a little bit more. I mean,
coming to life a little bit.
How do you feel about your team right now?
You know, it's interesting that they score 30 runs against the in 2 days against the Brewers. Who, I mean, listen, the Brewers started out great, but they're gonna trail off real fast here, and they're starting to already. And then obviously going into this big division matchup with the Orioles, and they really kind of, you know, out the gates, but. I feel okay. It's nice to see Judge coming around a little bit. I'm still worried about Glaber and the bullpen. I'm still worried about that bullpen, man. You know, the starting pitching is not the problem for the Yankees. It really isn't. Volpe fielding a little bit still.
That's all old hat. Okay.
But that's what their issue is, right? And they got to fix it because that's going to come back and bite you.
So I have my Jacob Shackman Red Sox decent positive thought of the week. Is Blaze Jordan in Double A? I don't know if people got a chance to see him when he was in Hartford, but the guy, he won Eastern League Player of the Week. He's had a lot of challenges with mental health.
Yeah, we talked about him.
Yeah, and you know, he batted over 400 last week and 8 RBI and 2 home runs during the week. Won Eastern League, you know, Player of the Week. And the reason I bring it up is that, you know, he's got a ton of talent, obviously, and baseball to me. Maybe, you know, school wrestling is the other sport that still, and this is why you should be so proud of your boys. No amount of cell phones or parental, like babying kids is going to replace the fact that you have to fail in order to succeed. Like, it's so rare in baseball to have, you know, Ken Griffey Jr. Like, I mean, there are so few instances of people who just almost never failed in the game of baseball.
Yeah.
And so, like, to see him get, you know, such buzz about his name and getting drafted, and then him clearly, like, I think whether it's the pandemic or whatever, struggling in life, and then to see him really just come alive as a potential, like, major leaguer is just really cool. So I just wanted to bring some attention to that, not just because he hit 444 for the week, because it's just 1 week of baseball, but the guy's, he's figuring it out in real time.
Yeah.
And in baseball is like the only sport that kind of happens.
And he's young too, which is good because he was drafted out of high school, I believe.
Correct.
And like you said, a ton of hype. You know, he was probably the next closest thing. I'm not going to say to totally Bryce Harper, but the hype wise, because he had the name, he was doing the home run hitting contests and all that stuff. And with a name like Blaze, of course you're going to have people paying attention to
you. It garners attention.
Right. And like we had talked about, sometime last year, it's been a while since we had mentioned him about his mental health issues and his struggles.
I tried to get him on the podcast. I couldn't do it.
And,
but,
you know, it's good to hear. And, you know, like they say, if you can hit at Double A, the chances are that you can play in the major leagues if you can excel at Double A. So good for Blaze. You know, it's good to see.
I mean, he's only batting .265 for the season, but he's obviously, something's going on. He got all his home runs for the season in 1 week. So that's my positive. Anything on the Yanks besides repeating what bothered you last week?
No. I like the fact that Judge looks like he's getting a little bit better. That's encouraging. Get it above 200 and keep going from there. Because as long as Judge is a force in the lineup, then Soto's going to see pitches.
Right. And it makes everyone's life
easier.
Better. And I don't watch them. I just look at box score. So, like, how is he looking in the field?
He's fine. Yeah, he looks totally fine in the field. And that's why I never really put much stock in the toe thing, because he was moving fine. You know, they'd be trying to hide him if the toe was bothering him.
He'd be DH.
And you listen, he's got a great oven mitt, too. So... he slides like that all the time, he says. And
really?
Of course, they looked at it. He does slide like that. But I mean, here's an interesting point. Is there going to be some regulation on these oven mitts?
I think it's so stupid. I mean,
for one, it's dumb. And now it's becoming a fashion accessory, basically.
It's just so stupid. They do it so they can slide head first and not get hurt?
And not get stepped on and their hand jammed and stuff. But it's, I mean, come on.
I think it's so dumb.
At some point, your hand is like 5.5 inches longer than it really is.
Right. And so you can be safe much easier. Right. I think it's total crap.
Because as long as that's touching the base, you're on, and then your bottom part of your hand or whatever is left underneath can grab
it's
it.
It's going to end up being like a sword.
Wong! Like, what's his name from Terminator 3, the Liquid Man?
Yeah. He's like, I think it's so true. I would ban him. I think it's just dumb. He's John Senecal. I'm Brian Shackman. This is Fan Base, a deep dive into the greatest rivalry in sports. You brought up this factoid as we got a couple points on the larger league about a game that the Dodgers played on Monday night
against the Diamondbacks.
Yeah, so did you read about it, or like how did you find out about
it? I just heard about it in a byline. But the crazy thing about a stat like this in baseball is when you hear a stat like a team went a whole game without striking out, and you know how many at-bats are involved or could be involved. Most players get minimum 4 at-bats a game. Right. So it's like 36. So the Dodgers on Monday night sent 42 players to the plate and not one player struck out. And that's the first time it's been done by the Dodgers in 18 years. Which when you think about it, you're like, well, that makes sense. But maybe it should have actually been longer, because that is such a crazy feat.
Not a single person
struck out in the lineup.
The entire game. I would say I don't know when the last time that happened in the majors or whatever, but clearly like the last 10 years, strikeouts are much more acceptable than they used to be. And so it's even harder to get this in the contemporary game. But, you know, back in the 80s and 90s, you know, people tried not to strike out because it wasn't like home run or strikeout culture.
Right.
So I think it's even a bigger thing. And they doubled up the D-backs. They beat them 8-4. And it's kind of crazy because they have some guys like Muncy who strikes out all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I couldn't believe it. And I never even thought of a stat like this. But when I looked, so I said to myself, all right, when was the last time the Yankees did it? When was the last time
did
the Red
Sox
did it?
Did you find that out? Do you know
that? Yeah, so as far as I can tell from my research, the last time the Yankees did it was August 23rd, 2014. And it was against the Chicago White Sox.
So it's almost 10 years ago.
And the last time the Red Sox did it was April 23rd, 2010 versus the Baltimore Orioles.
So that's 14 years ago.
Yeah. So, and the Dodgers, the last time they did it was 18 years. It hadn't been done in 27 years at Chase Field in Arizona. So I'm guessing it's probably something like a 10 to 20 year span where this actually happens.
How did you research that, by the way?
Well, the Google helps a lot, but then you kind of got to deep dive it, and then you go in and it's one thing to like find out when it is, and you look at the players involved, and that's like the cool part.
How long did it take? Because you can't just Google that. You would have to find a news story about it, but that's not a guarantee because they might not have written about it when it happened before.
Right. That's why I said as far as I can tell.
Yeah.
All right. But based on the numbers, it makes sense. But so on this lineup on these teams, right? The Yankees in 2014 had Jacoby Ellsbury batting leadoff.
Yep.
And the Red Sox had Adrian Beltre at third base. So a Hall of Famer and a complete bust on their lineups. And the other cool thing I saw,
Beltre was one and done at Boston. I wish they had kept him.
The Drew brothers were on opposing teams.
JD and it's not Christopher.
Nope.
JD, Drew, and because we had him. He was on the
Red Sox. On the Red Sox and the Yankees, yeah. Steven Drew. So Steven Drew was playing shortstop for the Yankees, and J.D. Drew was in right field for the Red Sox. The Drew brothers are playing against each other the last time both teams went without a strikeout.
That's phenomenal. I wish there was a way to get a cross-section of, like, if we had Stats, Inc. or, like, at ESPN back in the day, you'd get some, you know, 20 grand a year guy to go find out that answer.
I'd
love to know what that number is for every team the last time they win a game without anybody striking out.
It's a stat you never hear, though. So that tells me, like, for people that follow baseball, that tells me that it doesn't happen often.
No.
Because you just don't. That's why I was like, what? Nobody struck out? You've got to be kidding me. Nobody struck out.
That's cool. Listen, it's John Senecal, Brian Shackman here on Fan Base, a deep dive into the greatest rivalry in sports. We wanted to update you. You know, I actually got a lot of positive feedback. People liked hearing about your son.
Oh, really?
Good. Yeah. And so he made his decision on college.
Yeah. So, for 99% of the colleges across the country, even with the FAFSA delays with the student aid, May 1st is the deadline for most of them.
Some did extend, but most are still May 1st.
So all of ours, we had three that it came down to for our son that they were all May 1st. So,
can we name them?
Yeah. So it was
Fairfield, St. Lawrence,
and Loyola in Maryland.
Okay.
And we toured a bunch of schools. I mean, my wife had been on one. I've been on them. We've been on them together. I mean, the process is, it's a process, right? But ultimately, it came down to St. Lawrence and Fairfield for us. And
small private college in New York State, and Fairfield, obviously in Fairfield, Connecticut.
Fairfield, Connecticut. Now, not much different in size. Fairfield, a little bit bigger.
Yep.
Full Division I athletics, where St. Lawrence is only hockey, Division I. Right. Baseball at both. There was a chance. He had a rapport with the coach. There was a chance to walk on and try out.
I bet he would make St. Lawrence.
I don't know. They took one person last year, two people the year before, none the year before that. So there's no guarantees, right? So that was a big factor. He definitely wants to play baseball, but it came down. I mean, there was a lot of talk about, you know, trust the process. You know, it might not sound like the right thing now, but you know, we have a half a century of knowledge under our belt. We don't know it all, but.
So you influenced the decision.
Not as much as, yes, there was influence, because you're a parent. You don't want to see your kid make a decision where.
How do you know it's right for him and the other one isn't? Like,
you
that's
don't.
Why I
you
don't
really
want to be
don't.
Involved in the decision.
You have to go, a lot of it is you go on your gut too, right? What feels right for you and how long you've been around.
So can I say where he's going?
Yeah. Yes.
So he's going to Fairfield. Why, in your gut, is Fairfield better than St. Lawrence?
Well, I mean, the crazy story is, for me personally, it came down to basically almost like a higher kind of calling being. And I am not a religious person at all.
Catholic school?
No, I'm not a religious person at all. But I do believe in
fate,
extra powers, you know, sixth sense kind of stuff, divine intervention.
What told you that?
So I've had like three times in my life where I've had that. Once we got married, my wife and I walked out of the church and it was a perfectly clear day and we got a spritz of rain. And my grandfather had died right before that. I was super close to him and I was like, that had to be him, just being there on our day. The next time when my father passed away unexpectedly and I was going to spread his ashes out in a lake and I walked into the house to do it. I was by myself and I pushed the radio on. And the first song that came on was "I Wish Grandpa's Never Died" by Riley Green. And there was no intro to the song, no nothing.
Right.
It was literally that
right
song
there.
Started. And I was like, Jesus, it's just crazy.
Jesus, it's Jesus.
Jesus, right? So now we're touring Fairfield University, and it's kind of a joke. Like, I don't really go to church. I don't go to church. I do the Christmas church. Yeah. I do once in a while. I'm just not that person. My wife goes. My kids all went through the programs and did the thing. We go on the tours, and I've never went to any of the churches at these schools, all right? And I walked into Fairfield, into their church, and there was a sermon or whatever you call it, the mass going on. That's what we're talking about here, right? And the first thing I hear is the priest go, "Forever and ever." Now, people might not understand that, but that's my running joke when I go to church with the kids. I want to bet with them how many times the pastor is going to sing no, forever and ever. And like, that has been our running joke with my kids for however long we've been going to church. And I looked at my wife right when I heard that, and I just looked at her and I'm like, that's a sign. Like, that's a sign.
And so that convinced you heart.
It convinced me in my heart that was like the right choice for him. A bunch of other stuff too.
I got it.
So I shared that story with my son last night, and, you know, he can understand it more than a lot of people because he experienced one part of it with me, with the passing of my father, his grandfather. So he can understand, like, the behind it. And he's also an 18-year-old kid, but I think that weighed a lot on him. We had family members and family friends' kids that went to both universities call and talk to him. And my wife talked to him. I talked to him. It was not. There was no like, you got to do this, you got to do that. It was basically his decision to make, knowing that we really would like for him to go to Fairfield.
So, my situation with my daughter is she's deciding between two schools, and she pushed us and pushed us to give our opinion, saying it won't influence me. And I gave too many answers. I wouldn't give her that answer, but I gave her so many answers to so many questions that she thinks I favor one school. And I can't say I don't favor any school because she's already in her head doing that. And I worry about her making a decision with that influence, because if it's not something that makes her happy, then I don't want to be on the hook for it. And I want her to honestly have agency, because I feel like my children – my daughter has two alpha parents who make a lot of calls without even thinking about it. And I want her to make a decision. But Mike, so my question is, are you worried? What if he goes and he isn't happy?
Well, you know, that's a huge risk you take, but I think you take that with any sort of new thing, especially something this big where you're literally changing your life. Like I explained.
But that's what they look at as that big a decision, right?
Yeah.
Like, this is my life at stake.
So
here.
He has a friend that's a junior there that
likes it,
that loves it, that he has a good rapport with, that he knows that he hung out with before he left, that played baseball. He's on the club baseball team. My wife's friend, who she was a roommate in college with, who he knows her son. He just committed there. He's from Rocky Hill, which is also a town in Connecticut. So he'll know people, right? But that being said, you never know. And if you're going to take a risk like that, I think it's better to take it an hour and 15 minutes or an hour and 20 minutes away from home than 5.5 hours.
Yeah, I mean, if that's the perspective, it makes me rest a little easier. I just worry about her making a decision that's not the best for her because she wants to make either her parents happy or do the thing.
But the situation you're in, Brian, based on the two schools, I don't really see that she's making a bad decision.
I think that that's 100%.
It's hard
true.
To tell that to an 18-year-old, though.
Right.
It's extremely hard to tell that.
And
to
one
an
has a big, you know, like a more of a name brand reputation,
absolutely.
And the other one is a great school that doesn't have the same name brand reputation. But I'm nervous because I don't want her to, if she goes and isn't happy, I don't want her to second guess the decision, because I think if she second guesses it at any level, it will prevent her from giving her all wherever she does go, if that makes any sense. So I am nervous because my daughter has not, as of yet, made that decision. Listen, I wanted to share something with you before we go. So yesterday, my son is like not even on JV golf, my oldest son. He's like an alternate on JV golf, and he loves it, and he wants to do better, and he's trying his best. And he's always sort of said he wants to do some broadcasting. And so yesterday, he goes to Loomis Chafee in Windsor, Connecticut, and they have a great baseball program. They're not great this year, but they have produced a lot of D1 kids. They have two D1 arms who are hurt out for the year. And he, on the day, they had a home game, and he had the chance to announce the game. Like, there's no one. Last year, they had a kid who went to Syracuse Newhouse who did all the games.
Yeah.
And
so he's doing basically play-by-play or just PA announcing?
He's play-by-play on the live stream.
Okay, yeah.
And he's never done it ever. And it was a hard decision because he didn't know how to set it up, and he wasn't sure somebody on staff would be able to set it up for him. And, you know, it was a day he could go on the golf course and sort of challenge. Like, if he got a good score on the 9 holes, he could get a regular spot on JV for this week. And so he got clearance that he'd get help setting it up, so he decided to do the game. So he did the game. And obviously he's never done it in his life, and he might not even have known the other team that well. Like, he didn't do the hours of research that he
right.
would do. But it was really, like, it was a great first. Like, he was, like, I clicked on the live stream.
Yeah.
And he's, you know, 2-1 count, you know, like, and what I was so proud of, not only the fact that he did it, but he did something that I wouldn't have done, which is he didn't overtalk. You know, baseball is hard because there's a lot of silence and a
yeah.
lot of dead air. And I tell him, you could tell anecdotes about the guys on the team. You could tell a story about your childhood in Little League. You can
right.
fill it with whatever you want. And for his first time, whether it's conscious or nerves or whatever, he went the other way. He just did balls and strikes. And as things went on, he was a little more editorial, like, you know, hot shot over the head,
yeah.
you know, huge hit there. You know, great play in a tight spot, those kind of things, little things. But the fact that he didn't overtalk, I thought was, because that's something I still haven't learned.
Yeah.
I still overtalk.
Now, does he watch baseball or sports in general where there's announcing a lot?
He watches a ton of sports, but not a ton of baseball.
Right.
He watches a ton of basketball and hockey.
So he gets the play-by-play feel,
he knows,
but he doesn't have the baseball slowness of it.
Correct. And he said it was long.
Yeah.
And I said, yeah, it's long. But instead of like filling the dead air with what could be garbage and so on. And he also did something that I do too. So sometimes when there's actually like a 2-1 pitch and, you know, Johnson takes it for a called strike and you try to come up with something editorial like, you know, it's you know, a 2-1 count, you know, a hitter's count, and he would trail off.
Yeah.
And I used to have that problem a lot on the anchor desk. I would trail off, and I said, you got to punch it, right? You got to punch it at the end of it. So it's just kind of neat to
hear. Yeah.
Now, I didn't tell him that there's, like, no jobs in this business.
Right.
But it doesn't matter. It was kind of a cool thing for him to click on the live stream.
Yeah.
And his grandparents got to listen and whatever.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was cool.
Plus, it's something he gets his feet wet, right?
Yeah, and the first time is always the toughest. What if somebody told me, a guy I work with on the TV side believes that it takes three times to do anything right on TV? The first time, you have no idea what you're doing. Second time, you tighten it up. And the third time, it's the way it's supposed to be.
Well, it's funny you say that, because you, when you were telling me this story, I was fully expecting you to say, when you're like, oh, is this going to be set up and everything? I was totally expecting it was just going to crash and burn before it even started.
Right.
Right. The AV wouldn't have been right. The
right.
cable wasn't going to be there. Like, that is what I
that's how it was for me when I did.
Oh, yeah.
When I did, what was the guy, Jack, whatever, the guy who was the football coach at New Britain High for a long time?
Oh, Jack Cochran.
Jack Cochran.
Yeah.
The most successful coach in the state, but also
a, controversial
and not the nicest guy.
Yeah,
and I wanted to make a big splash in my first live on air thing on Friday Night Football, and I got him to commit to a live interview right before the game.
Yeah,
during the commercial,
he bailed.
He bailed on me, and I said, "You gotta do this." This like, and the thing is, and so then he said, "Fine," and he answered two questions with one word, and he walked away.
Me.
And I had never sigged out. And I had 90 seconds to
And you had to just, yeah.
And I
was, and you were pissed.
It was a disaster. So like I...
Boom goes the dynamite.
I am pretty familiar. And I had a leather jacket on.
Oh, man.
So if that clip is anywhere...
You've come a long way from that and Susie Whaley winning the Connecticut PGA. That was you and me.
You shot Susie Whaley with me? We ran all over the state to get that because she qualified for PGA event. That's where we first bonded.
Those were the days.
You've been listening to Fan Base, a deep dive into the greatest rivalry in sports.